Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. This is a Saturday pod. This should be a fun Saturday pod. Think of it, I got a lot of stuff to get to. I got some basketball talk, obviously, college talk. College basketball talk. Got some college basketball stuff, NBA kind of stuff, NFL. I gotta answer questions, answer you guys' questions and comments and so forth. So we got a lot in there. Think of it like a baked potato, a loaded baked potato. I know with my loaded baked potato, I like salt, pepper, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of butter. I know a lot of y'all probably go extravagant, probably add bacon strips. Think of this episode like a loaded baked potato. So whatever you get on your baked potato, think of this pod. It's just gonna be loaded with a lot of stuff. I'm gonna try to cover as many bases as possible on this pod, on the Saturday pod. I know a couple of you guys even hit me and said, hey, these 30-minute episodes are not gonna work. 30-minute episodes not gonna work. And I try to shorten it, you know. I try to be cautious that people don't have all day, every day to just listen to me, but I will take you guys up on that. I will take a couple people up on that. 30-minute pod, this will not be a 30-minute pod. So buckle up, get ready. But first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Greatly, greatly appreciate all the support, all of the streams, all of the listens, the comments, questions, and concerns that you guys may leave. So we got a lot to get into. As I said, this is a loaded episode. But I think the biggest news that came out at the end of the work week, right? It's Friday, you know, people getting ready for the weekend. Big news comes out. Bronny James declares for the NBA draft. And there was countless people that wanted me to discuss this. I even had a friend call me. I was in the middle of my class. And I had a friend call me in the middle of my class. Turns out he wanted to know if I talked about Bronny James. I did not. I did not talk about Bronny James quite yet. But here it is. So earlier this week, news broke that Bronny James was entering into the transfer portal. You know, expectably so, with Andy Enfield, USC's, previously he was USC's head basketball coach. He left USC, took the SMU job. Obviously, USC hires a new guy. So typically, this is typical. This is really typical when a college coach, when he gets fired or he decides to leave and take another job, usually players transfer. Some players may follow him to his next destination. Some players may go elsewhere. So Bronny James entering in the transfer portal wasn't that surprising, given the fact that his coach had left and so forth. Not that surprising. But then I think it kind of just shook up the basketball world and the basketball landscape when he declared for the NBA draft. Now, there's a lot of factors that go into this. Questions and thoughts that everybody may share on this whole topic. First thing is, like, why in the hell is Bronny James entering into the NBA draft, where essentially he's done nothing at the collegiate level? He's done nothing. And like I said, I am realizing, and you know, I'm realizing it. You either get called or labeled a hater when you don't give like overwhelming praise to something or someone. But instead, you give, like, true analysis. You just give, like, hard, cold facts. People don't tend to take those kind of things too well nowadays. And with Bronny, I have been on the record multiple times. Not a lot, but multiple times since, I would say, his senior year, when I have basketball people come on the pod and talk. I haven't seen elite. He wasn't elite at the high school level. He wasn't elite on the AAU circuit. He wasn't elite this past year at USC. So I have yet to see signs of that. Now, surprisingly so, and I'm not going to say surprisingly so, But the other side of that is, I do think with in the right situation, with given time and maturity and just natural progression, I do think Bronny can turn out to pan out to be a really good collegiate basketball player. I do. But I'm just, with me, I was first, when I first saw the news, I was trying to think of, well, what the hell is the upside? What is the upside to him declaring for the draft? Maybe, you know, get some pre-draft workouts in, maybe scouts, some executives tell him what he needs to work on, and he just, he goes back to school. But then I thought about, well, what about the LeBron element? LeBron, over the past couple of, really over the past couple of years, but it's really picked up over the past couple, you know, I would say half year, over the past like 6 to 8 months, I would say. His retirement talk and how long is how long he's going to be playing basketball in the NBA, that's kind of wrap it up. And just recently, he was like, he don't see himself playing too any much longer at this point. So I'm like, okay, what is actually the realistic possibility that Bronny James gets drafted? I don't know. And as I said, the fact of the matter is Bronny has never been elite on any level that he's played at, right? Never been elite at any level that he's played at. He doesn't have the game. You know, he's just going to go out and drop 30. Like, I know Gilbert Arenas, his son, Elijah Arenas, he's a monster. Like, he's a scoring machine, and I think he's only going into the 11th grade. He's a monster. He's one of he's going to be one of, if not the best player in his class. He's truly been dominant throughout his first couple years in high school. Bronny doesn't have that game. Bronny, I think, he does the little things. He's really smart. He's an intelligent player. You can tell that, you know, his dad's LeBron James because of the basketball IQ, right? But good shooting touch, I would say. Not a great one. Good shooting touch. His game doesn't just like wow you, and he's not the guy that's gonna score in bunches, but he does have the potential to be a really good defender. But he's also not a point guard, but he doesn't have the mentality, like I'm saying, he doesn't have the mentality as a shooting guard where he's just going to go out and get buckets. He's a true combo guard. Now, as I said, this whole situation, I had to really think back to with LeBron's aspect and how LeBron has treated this whole situation. Because for me, I think, in this whole situation, everything about LeBron becomes a walking contradiction on some level. The way how he has handled this situation, LeBron has been a little contradicting. He has, right? Remember not too long ago, about a month and a half ago now, but remember when some mock drafts had came out and the mocks were leaning towards Bronny not even being in this year's draft, but in next year's draft, and he was projected to go in the second round of next year's draft. Well, LeBron came out. He didn't like the criticism. He said, "Hey, let Bronny be a kid." He took the "let him be a kid" route. That's basically what he said. That's what he did. He said, "Let him be a kid. Let a kid be a kid" route. That was the route he took. Well, but LeBron was the same guy who said he's better than some NBA guys and he could help the Lakers out right now this year. So every situation with this whole Bronny thing, LeBron has kind of been a walking contradiction. And if LeBron wanted him to be a kid and let him learn and mature and grow as a player at the collegiate level, let him go with Drew Joyce, one of your best friends. He just got the coaching job at Duquesne, right? But selfishly, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm just pointing out the obvious. And we got to be able to point out the obvious and be honest. Selfishly, LeBron wants to play with his son. And I, you know, has anyone, and that's the thing with me. Selfishly, LeBron wants to play with his son, but has anyone stopped and even asked the question, is that the best option for Bronny? Is that what's best for Bronny? What's best for Bronny James? Because I don't know. I would argue that's not the best option. That isn't the best pathway for Bronny James. I think everybody's thinking about the element of LeBron wants to play with his son. LeBron wants to play with his son. Gotta make it happen. LeBron wants to play with his son. How does Bronny feel about this? Like, and Bronny's not gonna come out and be like, nah, I don't want to play with my dad. But in terms of what's the best situation, if we're contextualizing this whole situation, what is the best option for Bronny? Because I would argue, and I think there's plenty of you guys that would argue and agree, well, you wouldn't argue with me, but you would agree and argue the same, that him playing with LeBron James, at this point, right now, is it not the best option? It's just not the best option, right? He couldn't start at USC, by the way, who had a disappointing 15-18 season. Record on the season. They finished bottom three in the Pac-12, a Pac-12 conference that wasn't particularly good. So, and oh yeah, by the way, the instances he did start, they didn't win. So given all of what you know about this whole situation, Bronny hasn't really shown any signs or flashes of elite or being elite. He's really yet to establish himself as a decent college player, right? Entering into the NBA draft, I don't know. I think this situation is turning out. I mean, this situation is really sticky. And if you're the Lakers, with Bronny James declaring for the draft, this puts the Lakers in a spot where they like, are we really doing this? Like, are we really gonna stand behind this and follow through on this and get this done for LeBron, right? And, you know, they kind of have to. And I don't think LeBron is a goner. I think LeBron wants to stay in LA. I don't think LeBron wants to get up and leave and go to another team, another city. I think LeBron is gonna stay in LA. So if you're the Lakers, you're kind of have to do this, like somewhat. Like, I feel like it's more on the side of you kind of have to do this, and your hands are tied behind your back, right? But if they were to follow through on something like this, it would make the Lakers look a certain way. And like I said, I don't know if that's Bronny's best interest. Like, do you want to, and think about it, would you guys want to be the guy where it's like, you only made it in the league because of your dad? Like, I don't know if I want that stench. I don't know if I'm Bronny, I don't know if I want that to be my label. I don't know if I want that to be my label, right? Do you want to be known as the guy that's only in the league because of your dad? I don't know. But nepotism isn't new in our society. Nepotism isn't new, and it does happen everywhere. And I know that's going to be some people's fallback. Well, it's nepotism, and LeBron, when LeBron does it, it's a problem. It's happening everywhere. Yeah. Just because it's happening doesn't make it right. Right? Like, I think we become, just because something is normalized in something that's not like nepotism. Is nepotism morally right? No, right? It like morally, just thinking about it, nepotism isn't the best thing for our society. But that's what happens a lot of time in our society, where we normalize certain things that shouldn't be normalized. And because it's happening everywhere, or it happens often, we just become desensitized to it. And we're like, okay, sure. It's happening everywhere. Why can't LeBron do it? And that's why I say it's contradictory. It's contradictory on LeBron's point. It's contradictory. It's contradicting. It's just a walking contradiction. So I don't know. If you're the Lakers, you gotta follow through on this. I feel like you gotta be asking yourself, are we really following through on this? Are we really gonna do this? LeBron's kind of forcing their hand. This isn't the same situation as like a Ken Griffey Jr., where like Ken Griffey was ready to take that leap. Bronny James, clearly, we all know that he is not ready to be an NBA player, right? He's not ready to be an NBA player. I think he has certain skill sets that fit the NBA, right? I think he has certain skill sets that could fit the NBA. But at this point, at this moment, not an NBA player. Not an NBA player. He's just not. Okay, so that's all I have on that. Let's move on. Okay, so I think a good segue here is actually to focus on Women's Final Four. Finals Four was last night. I watched both games. South Carolina and NC State, pretty good game. Expectantly, I thought South Carolina would win. Pretty close in the first half. It was a 1-point. South Carolina had a 1-point lead going into halftime. I think it was 32-31. Came out in the second half, completely just took over. Their depth, their size, physicality just overtook NC State. So they won comfortably in the second half. Then we get to Iowa and UConn. The game that was highly, highly anticipated by a lot of people. I'm sure there's a lot of eyeballs on that game. Can't wait to see what the rating numbers are looking like. Probably won't be as high as Iowa and LSU, but I would imagine it'll probably be within the same range of Iowa and LSU. Probably not more, but in the same ballpark. Really good game. Really good game from start to finish. Iowa, not the best offensive night, right? Not the best offensive night offensively as a team from Iowa. But then also Caitlin Clark, she didn't have her most like explosive scoring, right, night. I think she finished with like 21 points. I think she finished with 21, 9, and 7. And as I told you guys previously on the other pod or earlier this week on the pod, the thing that I like about Caitlin Clark that I think just puts her over the top and that separates her, it's not her ability to score 30 or 40 in a given night, right? Like, that's awesome. that's a great skill to have. That's great to have in your bag. But it's her playmaking. For me, it's her playmaking. Now, granted, she's a great three-point shooter, and her range is crazy. She has what we call pulling from the parking lot range. She has the type of range where as soon as she steps into the gym, you have to be on full alert. She has that type of range. Now, that all is good and gravy, and I love that part about her game, but what separates her is her playmaking. And I told you guys this previously, earlier this week. It's one thing to go out and get 30 and 40. It's a whole other thing to get 30 and 40 and then also include your teammates in the mix and get them involved and make them look really good. And that's what Caitlin Clark continues to do. That's what she continues to do. Hannah Stokey had a really good night for Iowa. Iowa defensively as a unit played pretty well. Both teams played pretty good defense. I mean, for both of these teams, especially Iowa, to be high scoring, really productive offensive teams, both defenses came to play. Now, let's get to the nitty-gritty. And also, UConn did a really good job with defending Caitlin Clark. It wasn't just Caitlin Clark had an off night. UConn had a lot to do with that. UConn had a lot to do with that. Constant ball pressure. When she didn't have the ball, constant just face guarding her. Deny, deny, deny. It was some really, really good defense from UConn and a good defensive game plan from Geno. But the foul call, the illegal screen call that has everybody in a frenzy. And I thought when I watched it in real time and they called the foul, I thought it was pretty obvious when I watched it in real time. Then I quickly doubled down on that thought and opinion once I saw it in slow motion. I saw the replay, and then I continue to see it, and I continue to see it. And everybody's just in a frenzy online, on social media, on X, formerly known as Twitter. I mean, everybody is just going crazy. And I don't think this call was much of a controversy. But like many of our topics and things that we have here in America, I think we look, and you know, I don't want to get too political or too like social, but here it is. I think this is just Isaiah's little opinion. I think on too many topics in our country where I don't think it should be that all that controversial. We make things really controversial, and we love opposition. That's just my take in the state of the country. That's just my take. You know, Isaiah's State of the Union. I think in a whole lot of topics that should not be controversial, we make controversial because we love opposition. I don't know why, but I digress. Going back to basketball. I don't get the controversy. I feel like it was pretty clear. I think this was a foul call. And I think just because you don't like the call doesn't mean it was the wrong call, right? I woke up this morning, early in the morning. I'm recording this early in the morning. I woke up this morning, I still thought it was an offensive foul. I'm just not anybody, and I don't think there's anyone that can convince me that it's not an offensive foul. I just don't see where people are making this a controversy. And everybody's like, oh, it's rigged, it's this, it's that. We constantly, and I sometimes feel for officials and referees, because we constantly want them to get it right. We want our officials to get it right. We want them to get it right, call, make the right calls, be decisive. Well, in this instance, I think they made the right call, right? They were decisive in the call. And granted, was the timing peculiar? Yes, the timing was peculiar, because I know a lot of people like, you can't end the game like that. You can't, the referees can't dictate the game like that. You don't make a call like that at the end of the game. Well, don't set an illegal screen, because the officials did not dictate the outcome of the game. You know who did? Aaliyah Edwards. And it's sad, because that's the end of her collegiate career, and that's the last moment of her collegiate career. I'm sorry about that. And she played really well, and she's going to be highly picked in this upcoming year's WNBA draft, but that was an offensive foul. So we can't have our cake and eat it too. We can't say we want officials to get the call right. You get the call right, you make the right calls, be decisive. And then when they make the right call, and then when they're decisive in making the right call, we have a problem with the timing. I mean, it's a damn you do, damn you don't. You can't make everybody happy. God damn. It's like everybody, like, and not just everybody, because there is a great population. I think there's more people that think it was the right call than less. I think the majority of people think the right call was made. I think there's a minority of people that are either biased, or they're either mad that the game ended in that fashion, or they're even mad that Iowa won for whatever reason. They think it was the wrong call and the game was rigged. Right? It was an illegal screen. It was an illegal screen. But even if you want to be the person that want to be oppositional and you want to say it was the wrong call and you disagree, well, guess what? That lead never should have been blown. UConn had a lead. They shouldn't have blew the lead. They blew a lead. Oh, yeah. By the way, they should have boxed out on their free throws. But UConn had a lead, ladies and gentlemen. They had a lead in the game. They lost the lead. So when I see people say the officials can't dictate the game like that, you can't make that call in that moment, they didn't dictate the outcome of the game. The players did. UConn gave up the lead. Iowa came back, took the lead. Aaliyah Edwards set an illegal screen. That is not the officials dictating the outcome of the game. But we have all of these, if everything has become cliche, and just because you don't like the call doesn't make the call the wrong call. Sorry, yes, unfortunate that we couldn't see UConn get a shot up on their last offensive possession. So unfortunate, very unfortunate. But it was the right call. You know, so granted, people may not like how the game ended, but everyone always says, hey, that's a terrible time to make that call. Or you can't call that foul at that time. But does anyone ever think to say, well, Aaliyah Edwards, that was a terrible time to set an illegal screen, right? That was a terrible time. Or the ball, I forgot who was the ball handler. Because I know Aaliyah Edwards was setting the screen, the off-ball screen for Paige, but whoever the ball handler was, UConn was down one. You could easily attack the rim, so Aaliyah Edwards didn't have to. I'm guessing that was the set, that was the play that was drawn. But that was a terrible time to set an illegal screen. So I don't think it was as egregious as people are making it seem like. I just don't think it was that egregious as people was making it seem. That was an illegal screen. You cannot, by the rule, you cannot at any time of the game just step, can't step in front of a defender trying to go around and set a screen. You just can't. Additionally, Aaliyah Edwards put her forearm into the screen. You can see it. And I saw that in real time, and then I saw that also in the replay. I don't know what people want. But let's move on. I think this is going to – I'm going to move on to Stephon Diggs. I'm going to talk more about the Texans and Stephon Diggs and how it positions them in terms of the AFC hierarchy. We'll talk about that. So last pod, I spent some time talking about the Stephon Diggs trade, and obviously I went through, you know, how it impacted both teams, both Texans and Bills, and a little bit more on the Texans. As I told you guys, I think not just only with this Stephon Diggs acquisition, but with some of the other pieces that they have been able to add over the offseason, like a Joe Mixon, like a Danielle Hunter, it does put them firmly in the conversation when we talk about teams that can possibly compete with the Kansas City Chiefs or even take down the Kansas City Chiefs. We talk about the Ravens, you know, a healthy Joe Burrow with Cincinnati. I think the Texans belong in that discussion, at least. I think they belong in that discussion. I think that's their ceiling, right? As of right now, I think they're a team that, you know, when we discuss teams that can go deep into the playoffs, they're in that discussion. And I often tell you guys, I like when teams take big swings, right? Wasn't trying to rhyme there, but I like when teams take big swings. Couple years back, the Rams, remember the Rams where they were just going, I'm not going to say big name hunting, but they would just willingly trade picks. They would trade first, second round, third round picks to acquire stars like Jalen Ramsey, and they had Brandon Cooks, and they They just had a litany of just players in and out. They took big swing, big chances, because they felt like they had a window of opportunity where they thought they could win a Super Bowl. And I'd be damned. I mean, time after time after time again, they either found themselves in the Super Bowl or they were going deep into, they were playing deep into January, right? There was a stretch where the Rams, they were playing deep into January in these playoff games. And but they took these big flyers, and their thing was, fuck those picks, right? They was like, fuck those picks. We going all in. And they would go, you know, get Von Miller and Odell Beckham. And like, they, you know, they just went big name hunting. And eventually it propelled them to get over the top and win the Super Bowl. And I like I said, I'm just always a proponent of teams taking. Now, obviously there's some risk to it, right? Because the downside to, as my example of the Rams, the downside to, you know, them getting rid of, you know, just moving off of picks and acquiring all of these expensive kind of older guys, you know, it led them to, you know, they had to take a couple cap casualties. They had to move off of some guys sooner than what they probably would like. And they had to go extremely, extremely young, and they had to build through the draft really without any high-end draft picks, right? And now, just this past year, it kind of took, it took them about a year or two to kind of bounce back and get back on their feet. But then this year they bounced back. They had a healthy Matthew Stafford. The rest is history. You know, they, you know, they draft certain guys like Puka Nacua, got some guys on defense. They were a pretty good team this year. And with the Texans, you did the, you past two off seasons, you've kind of done a good job. You've done a really, really good job. Tip of the cap to Nick Casario. He's done a really good job. You drafted the right quarterback. Seems like you hired the right coach, right? So, and I know Nick Casario, me personally, I have my doubts because he's coming from that Belichick tree. And Belichick's coaching tree has objectively just been bad. But the personnel, but Belichick's personnel people, they've had some good runs in the NFL. And Nick Casario, he's done a really good job. Now, the Texans, like I said, I like it. I like the fact that they take big swings. This is also the benefit of having, you know, cap and contracts, flexible contract numbers that you can work with, where it allows you to, you know, acquire expensive players and so forth. Now, more on the dig straight, because everybody is talking about what the Bills have lost, what they have lost, and what they have lost on offense and defense. And so, well, if you're unlike me, I think Buffalo is still going to be okay. Now, I'm not saying Buffalo is going to be this world beater. They're going to win 12 to 13 games. No, but I still firmly, I have belief in Josh Allen. I have belief in the culture that they have built in Buffalo. I don't think they're just going to completely fall off the map and sink underwater. But let's just say there is a group of you guys out there that thinks Buffalo, they're not going to be as good. They're not going to win their division. Well, doesn't this inherently put more pressure on Tua Tagovailoa? Because everybody, because Tua is now the next quarterback in line. You know, Tua, Trevor Lawrence, those type of guys. Those are the guys that's next in line to get their payday. Or maybe. 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 Because this could, this particular year, this could give the Dolphins somewhat of an out, right? Because now, and I always say, you got to be very careful and be and very patient with quarterback contracts in general, right? But with this Tua, with in particular the Tua, I think the Dolphins, it is best if they don't pay him this offseason, right? If they don't pay him this offseason. Granted, the Dolphins have lost some guys, but they've also added something to their roster. But if Buffalo, if the masses think Buffalo is not going to be as good this year, this should be Miami's year to win a division, right? if the masses are still kind of unsure of the New York Jets thing, and I mean, it's the New York Jets, how so certain we can be on the New York Jets, right? And then the Patriots, they got a first-year head coach. We don't know what the hell they're doing on offense in the quarterback spot. I just read a report that they feel comfortable with Jacoby Brissett. Okay, we'll see how that works. This means the Dolphins should be in prime position to win a division, right? That's what this means. So I think the Dolphins should be very patient on Tua's contract situation. And here's the thing. In sports, it's typically easy, and you typically can't go wrong with paying premium for premium, right? You pay a premium for premium players, right? You can't go wrong with giving Ohtani a historic deal. You can't go wrong with giving Mookie Betts a historic deal. You can't go wrong with giving Mike Trout, a prime Mike Trout, or Patrick Mahomes, or LeBron James, or Steph Curry. When we talk about these players, these are premium, high impact, high level, elite, best cream of the crop, best of the best type of players. You can never go wrong with signing those guys. Those guys are they're them, right? Shohei Ohtani is him. Right, Mookie Betts is a top three player in baseball. Can't go wrong with signing those type of guys. The difficulty comes when you particularly have a solid to good player, right? And you got to ask yourself, well, how good is he? And with Tua, he's a good player. I think Tua is a good player. I think most of us will agree that Tua isn't a top five. He's not an elite quarterback. Some would even argue that he's probably not even a top 10 quarterback. So he's good, but we can all recognize and see that he has a ceiling. And in these big moments, or he doesn't necessarily land high enough where you would give him a historic contract, right? Right? I think a lot of us think, it's still a top 10 quarterback. Maybe if you're a Tua fan, if you're pro Tua, you probably think he's somewhere around, reasonably thinking he's probably somewhere around 9 or 10, 11, 12-ish. Me, myself, I'm not anti-Tua, but he just doesn't land high enough where you feel confident in giving him a historic type contract. So if I'm Miami, this is a prove it year. This is a prove it year. The Bills, who have ran this division over the past, I would say, 4 to 5 years? Over the past 4 years, they have ran this division, right? And they're quote-unquote downgrading. Let's see if Tua can get it, if he can get it done, right? Let's see if Tua can get it done. Because typically, and Tua, like I said, Tua has been good. So when I say this, I am not anti-Tua. But when we think of Tua, he's been good in certain spots. But in the biggest of moments, in the biggest of games, he leaves a lot to be desired. He leaves a lot of meat on the bone. Right, he leaves a lot of meat on the bone in the biggest spots, in the biggest games, and some of these teams just feel like they just feel obligated to just pay their quarterback early. They feel obligated to pay their guy early, and I don't quite know why. It's the trap that a lot of NBA teams fall into. Like, we have a franchise player, we're just going to give him a supermax deal. Mind you, that franchise player is like the 19th best NBA player in the league. He's like the 19th. Best player in the league. But teams are just feel so obligated to just pay certain guys early. So if I, like, just think of it as an economical exercise. Are you willing to pay Tua Tagovailoa $45 to $50 million, knowing damn well that he is not the best quarterback in his division? And depending on how Aaron Rodgers look, he may not even be the second best quarterback in this division. If I'm Miami, this is a prove it year. This is a prove it year. And I know a lot of people like, well, you pay him early, so you get a discount. I'd rather feel comfortable in paying and knowing what I have in my quarterback than getting a fucking discount. Sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. It kind of irks me when people say, well, you can get a discount if you pay him early. Really? Oh, really? I can get a discount. Ask the Eagles when they paid Carson Wentz early. Ask the Eagles, how did that discount feel? Right? How did that discount feel? When people say that, it's like, oh, well, you got to get a discount. If you pay him early, you can get a discount on this contract. You can get a discount on the market. And it's like, okay, would you rather take a discount or would you rather feel comfortable in knowing what you paid for? I'd rather feel comfortable in knowing what I paid for. So if Tua can win the division, win a couple playoff home games, and you look up, the Dolphins found themselves in the AFC Championship game, then voila, Dolphins, go ahead and pay him. I wouldn't be mad. But this whole notion that he has to get paid and you're going to pay Tua, he's going to get this big-time contract. If I'm the Dolphins, I just would hold off on that. I would hold off on that type of economic, that type of financial decision. And I would wait and see. I want to see results. If this is truly the year where Buffalo is quote unquote downgrading, right? Like that's some people's, like I said, that's not my sentiment, but if they're downgrading and they're not going to be this good and they're not going to win a division this year, that puts more pressure on Tua and the Dolphins to actually get it done and win the division. Okay, I think this is time for me to answer some of you guys' questions and comments that you guys have left. I would assume that we're well into the pod. We're past 30 minutes into the pod. I know that for a fact. So for those people that was like, oh, you need a longer pod. Okay, here you go. You have it. We're 30 plus minutes into the episode. So let me just pull up some of these questions and comments that you guys have left me over the past week and a half or so. I'm going to cover those. I'm going to answer those to the best of my ability. Let's go. All right. So I got four questions picked out, out of the several, like you guys have left, some great questions. Can't get to all of them. Trying to keep in track. I don't want this pod to be too long. We're already like 40 plus minutes into it, so I don't want to keep you guys here any longer. But I definitely answer the remaining questions and any more questions that continue to pile in. I dedicate an episode to it because that's what we're gonna do. I answered some questions. I dedicated an episode by answering some questions a couple weeks ago. So. Yeah, we'll definitely do that. But with the four questions we have, I think all of them are football related. So let's get to the questions. First question that we have is from Chase. He says, Isaiah, I know you watch a lot of Michigan football. What are some realistic expectations for them this upcoming season? Great question. Greatly appreciated, Chase. I don't think they're repeat as champs, as national champions. I don't. Which is okay. Now, Vegas isn't counting them out. They have the 8th best odds to win it all. And their over-under win total is set at 9.5. Now, we'll see if that changes. It's April. It's the beginning of April right now. We're just getting into spring football, spring camp. So that could very well change and fluctuate by the time we get to August, September. But, first year head coach. J.J. McCarthy left, Blake Corum left, wide receiver 1 and 2 left, 6 of their top 7 offensive linemen also declared, they went to the draft, so they're gone. So there's going to be a lot of youth, there's a lot of turnover offensively. Now, luckily for Michigan, They do get some mainstays. They get some productive impact players coming back on defense. And their defense should still be solid. I don't know. I don't know if their defense is going to be as good as it was last year, just given the fact that there's so much turnover. But their defense should be one of the best defenses in the conference. So you have that. Now, Alex Orji at quarterback, he is, I'm projecting that he will be their starter. I think he's really fascinating. I know they have some confidence in him internally. So he surprised some people due to, you know, him not having a lot of like on-field experience, but he definitely knows this system really well. But it's not a guarantee. It's truly not a guarantee just based off the fact that he's inexperienced and he's going to be surrounded by inexperience, right? It would dramatically help. It would drastically help. And it'd be drastically different if, you know, okay, this is his first time playing, you know, being the full-time starter, and he's surrounded by a bunch of upperclassmen and so forth, kind of the group that went on with the draft. If that was him, okay, you know, we're in a different situation. This is drastically different. But you get a first-year head coach in Sherrone Moore. It's not a guarantee. It's a lot of question marks. Not necessarily a bad thing or a negative thing, but there's question marks. And we have to see if they get answered. I think their first two games of the season is versus Fresno State, and then they get Texas at the Big House. I think 9.5 wins. I think they can get 9 to 10 wins. They probably, because, you know, Texas would be really good. I don't think they play Oregon. Let me see if Michigan plays Oregon. Michigan 2024 schedule. I should probably have this already pulled up, but I don't. 24 football schedule. Okay. They play, you know, Ohio State at some point, but let's look at the games that they have. They got Fresno State. They got Texas. That's at Michigan. Both of those games are at Michigan. Arkansas State, USC, Minnesota, Washington, Illinois, Oregon, Ohio State. So, you know, obviously a lot of people are going to watch. A lot of people are going to look at the Texas game, the Ohio State game, the Oregon game, the USC game, and Washington game should be interesting as well. I mean, I think their ceiling, 10-2, I think their ceiling could possibly be 9-3, 10-2. Right now, I think Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State are better than Michigan. Like if you were asking me, you know, what games were they if they were to lose, I would probably pick, you know, two of three of those opponents, because those three opponents, I mean, Oregon, Texas, and Ohio State, they're considered to be the favorites this year. But, you know, they're in the class with Georgia, like they're in that class. So I think Michigan could win ceiling 10 games. I think the low end, maybe 7 or 8 wins. I think they hover around 9 wins this upcoming season, which is not bad, given the fact that there's so much turnaround. I think they hover somewhere in between 8, 9. High end is 10, but I think 8 or 9 wins. Next question that we have on the docket. Been tapping in with the pod since football season. You talked about streaming platforms on the pod a while ago. What streaming services do you have or prefer? And then you said, I think every game eventually will be on streaming platform. Okay. This is from Stefan. Okay. I have talked about streaming platforms and streaming a little bit. Which streaming services do you have or prefer? Okay, so, oh yeah, I remember telling you guys this. So during the football season, yes, I had the NFL Sunday Ticket. I still have Peacock. Max. I have Max. So I have Max. I have Peacock. I have Netflix as well. Though, so for me, in terms of, I guess you're asking, what do I prefer in terms of like watching the game? I like Peacock's layout. I think it's an affiliate of NBC, obviously. So, you know, it's a lot of NBC stuff on Peacock. It's all NBC stuff on Peacock. I like Peacock. I like Peacock a lot. It's really affordable, and I think I pay like $4 a month for Peacock. So Peacock is really pretty good. Max is also really good as well. It's been really helpful with the tournament. I've been able to watch all of the tournament games with Max. I think it has TNT, TBS, and True TV on Max. So Max has been really, really beneficial and helpful. Also, you get the NBA TNT games. So that'd be helpful. I like Max. I've grown to like Max. Max is a bit expensive. I think it's like $10.99, but it's a bit expensive. I prefer those. Yeah, I prefer those. I think that's a pretty good question. And then in terms of you think every that comment that, you know, you think every game will eventually be on like a streaming platform. I think you're right. I was when I joked about it earlier, and I know what you're referring to. When I joked about it earlier in the year about, man, all these games are essentially going to be on some type of platform. They are. Essentially, they are. I don't find it coincidental or just accidental that Netflix is finding its way into the sports world, and they're doing this. You know how Netflix had the quarterback show with the quarterbacks? Now they're doing the receivers. I don't find it coincidental that the Netflix are trying to dabble into, you know, the NFL and in the sports world just in general. I also have Amazon Prime. They have the Thursday night games. Their layout is pretty cool too. So yeah, I don't have all of them, but I got the ones that I'm really selective with it, I would say. So I got the ones that I like, that I need. I feel like I have the ones that I need. I try not to, you know, spend too much money on all of these platforms, but I have the ones that I need. But yes, I do think, you know, big time players like Netflix, YouTube has already entered into that stratosphere, but YouTube as well. Like all of these streaming platforms are trying to get in good in terms of the sports world, but also with football, with the NFL and college football. They're trying to get in good. Trust me, like the TV, like they're trying to get in good. So definitely, I think that's something to watch out for. That's a really broad and like that's a whole different conversation to have right there. Another question I got from a friend, he wanted me to talk about, he's a Commanders fan. He wanted me to let him know if the Commanders should go with Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Now, I haven't talked much about these quarterbacks, I don't think, on my pod. I haven't talked much. It has started to increase a little bit more as we get closer to the draft. Me personally, I favor Drake May, you know, over Jaden Daniels. My concerns or the questions that I have about Jaden Daniels, first, he has a small frame for a guy that does a lot of running and escaping the pocket and moving with. He has a really small frame. Yes, he's tall, but he has a small frame in terms of like the whiff, where you look at a guy like Caleb isn't necessarily the tallest guy. He's like 6'1", maybe. Not the tallest guy, but he's stocky. He has a build to him. And his frame is bigger than Jaden Daniels, if you understand where I'm coming from. So I worry about that with Jaden Daniels. I worry about with Jaden Daniels, him as a processor. I think too many times we fall in love with the physical attributes and the physical traits, where I just worry about the processing. I mean, you got to be able, you have to be able to win in the pocket if you want to be a high-end quarterback. If you want to be a high-end starting caliber quarterback, you got to be able to win in the pocket. And I, looking at some of his tape at LSU, there's some tweaks, there's some nicks, there's some red flags in terms of, you know, him being able to read progressions and go through progressions. So, and that literally, Justin Fields, like, loved his physical traits, loved his physical abilities at Ohio State, and some of it was shown in Chicago, but ultimately, he couldn't process and read and get through progressions. And I kind of see some of those similarities with Jaden Daniels. Now, with Drake May, I see a guy, he's a bigger quarterback. Kind of has a Josh Allen kind of element to him where, you know, you look at Josh Allen, you look at some of the throws that he make, and you sometimes like scratch your head like, what the hell was he looking at, right? But then it's also a blessing and a curse, because it's like, wow, you made an ill-advised throw. But then sometimes it's like, wow, only maybe two other dudes can do that in the world, right? And Drake May has that type of element and that type of feel. So I like Drake May. I would, if I'm the Commanders, I would side and draft Drake May. But something's telling me they're going to go with Jaden Daniels. But I would draft Drake May to be that guy at two for the Commanders. I would go with Drake May. I love the instincts, his escapability. I love him as an ad libber. I like Drake May a lot. I like the measure. I think the measurables are there. I think he should be the clear number two. I also like JJ McCarthy. JJ McCarthy has he's grown on me. No Diddy, but he's grown on me a lot. He truly has. So, but I would go with Drake May. Next question. I think this is the last question. Great pod, or this is back from, this is from March 28th. This is from Rock. This is from Rocky. He said, great pod per usual, but how do you feel about Shedeur Sanders as a prospect? How do I feel about Shedeur Sanders as a prospect? I like Shedeur a lot. I really do. I don't think he's this type of like some type of generational prospect, right? I don't think he's a generational prospect. And I love the fact that he decided to go back into school. I will say this. Given what I saw last year at Colorado, and I'm going to include the fact that what he did at Jackson State, because what he did at Jackson State, I don't think gets talked about enough. And I'm a Shedeur Sanders fan. So I didn't doubt or second question whether or not if he would work at the Power Five level. I always thought he would work at the Power Five level, because he was a Power Five quarterback coming out of high school. Bunch of SEC schools, top schools wanted him. He just didn't choose that, you know, didn't choose that route. I think he's a first-round quarterback. I can definitely see him being a first-round quarterback. I think he's a lot faster, a lot more athletic than what we see or than what we saw. There was a couple times where I saw him run and get out the pocket and escape. He's a really good athlete. He's a lot faster than what I think people give him credit for. He's a better athlete than what people give him credit for. Throws a pretty good deep ball. I would say he has a tendency to hold on to the ball pretty for a while. But as an overall prospect, I definitely think he's a first round caliber quarterback, but ultimately I can see him being a top 10 pick. I can see him being a top 10 pick for next year's draft. I could. You know, that's some lofty, I'm setting some lofty expectations, but given what I saw last year, at Colorado, and just, you know, I guess projecting what Colorado will look like in the Big 12, I'm sure he'll probably put up some pretty good numbers. I could definitely see Shador being a top 10, top 15 pick, definitely a first round quarterback, but I can definitely see him being a top 10 pick. So that's going to wrap it up. Like I said, those are the four questions that I picked out. I will answer the remaining questions on another dedicated episode to answering you guys' questions and comments. But I bid you guys adieu. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I had fun making it. Like I said, I told you guys it was a loaded baked potato. This episode, I told you guys to think of it as a loaded baked potato. So whatever you like on your baked potato, you know, I like salt, pepper, you know, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of butter, maybe some garlic, onion powder, right? But if, you know, whatever you guys like on your loaded baked potato, imagine this episode is that. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Peace, deuces. I am out. I catch you guys next week.